Accession number 24195, reel 6.
Mr. Luff, reel 6. We're talking about your time on HMS Gore when you were based at Pollock Dock, Belfast. And you said you had to be careful not to go on the Springfield Road. What was the problem on Springfield Road, though? You haven't actually explained that.
I would say it was the Catholic area, and they weren't very friendly to us. But there was no really animosity between it, but we knew it was there. They knew that you could start a little confrontation if you went up there. They were known, but Bishop was there early in the war, and he said they used to put two bricks in their gas mask when they went ashore. That's how troublesome it was at the time. But we was on good friendly terms. The law was very sharp. You couldn't argue with a cop with a big ulcer. And they was very sharp and always seemed twice as big as us. Mind you, we was only kids, so it seemed that way. But Belfast was a lovely town, really welcomed. You could, dockies would, the times it's happened, you'd be, dockie, you'd look at them and you'd, cigarettes, Paddy, if you don't mind, you know, you'd give them 20 cigarettes and next thing you know, they'd insist on you come home and have a cup of tea and it'd be like that. And you just had so many friends, like, you know, no bother, lovely. Lovely town.
Now, what sort of work were you doing from May onwards? Because that's the run-up to D-Day.
I remember practicing. I don't know if we went up to Loch Alsh in Scotland, like opposite to Belfast, up the RSC over Loch Alsh. Done trials with a submarine. The submarine, very rare, had the number, but it also was named Hastings. 1922 it was.
And what type of trials were you doing?
With hedgehog, and I'll tell you something funny, we do rarely use hedgehog, and one of our hedgehogs stuck in a vent and she couldn't surface, and that's another reason why they didn't use a lot of this hedgehog. And that was dummy hedgehog, mind you, what happened. We fired hedgehog and that's what happened. Anyways,
so you were just practicing, you know, firing your depth charges and your
with the mainly getting ASDIC things, getting the ASDIC people used to out of plot of course and all that. Like, we done firing at sea, different targets, but it was only a matter of a few days that, and back he was again. And I don't know if we done a convoy in between, but the next thing I remember of note was, it must have been, like a week or so later, we was told to go to Anglesey. And the rumour was that we knew about landings coming off, because you could see the activity all around the coast, and we knew about that they was coming off. But what happened, it was put back, we tumbled, and we was told to go into Anglesey, the group. So it was a lovely week's holiday. We went there, the sun was shining, and we was at the jetty at the Mulfrey Bay. And all the local people spoke Welsh. So you wouldn't understand, you could speak English, but mainly was all Welsh. And the weather was good, but the pubs never opened till 8 of the night. And I wasn't a drinker that much then, but I used to like a beer and a chat. But I remember one particular night, we were sitting there waiting for the pub to open, all on the jetty, all on the stone jetty, a line of about 200 matlows, I reckon, and along the jetty came a priest. And do you ever George Robey, the comic priest of years ago, round, what's his name, hat, frock coat, this chaplain walked along and he had a bag with him, and as he walked past us we could hear the bottles clinking, so all the boys was looking, like, you know. Anyway, the pub had a veranda, wooden veranda, and he went up the pub, up the steps, tall man, old though, and he got to the front door, knocked on it, bang bang bang, nothing up, bang bang bang, nothing up. Then into his waistcoat, he undone his frock coat, into his waistcoat, he pulled out a key and he opened the door. And as he opened the door, all the Matlows cheered and ran. We was all in the pub. And that was something I'll always remember. But another thing, our Australian number one, Anthony Anzac, I was a motorboat's crew, Bishop was the quarter, the quartermaster, whatever, and called us away one morning, about 6 o'clock. Come on, lads, he said. Ever tasted seagull's eggs? No. Might have done, but you don't remember. He said, come on, we're going to get some seagull's eggs. And we went over islands, what never been used for yonks, and we climbed over these islands, and it was beautiful, and the birds was... seabirds was flying about, and we got stacks of eggs and brought them back. That was the first morning. Every morning there we got these eggs, and the boys loved them. They were stronger than chicken's eggs, but they was good. But then there was a little bit of a foul up. We had a spring, which is a hawser, go round the screw, apparently, whatever, it was released. And it was round round the screw. It never stopped us going ahead, but it stopped us. There was something wrong down there. So they took us round to Liverpool. We went in Liverpool, Gladstone Dock, and went down the river into Gladstone Dock, spent the night there. They done it, turned us round, and we come back. Come back into Moelfre, and from there down the Irish Sea, early in the morning. Well, it was early at night, really, in the morning. Next thing we know, we're ahead of a great big convoy of landing barges, all the lot. And we was doing the sweep in front. And we was up the front of that. And from then on, there was cruisers there banging away. And afterwards, like, you know, and there was some aircraft, but not a lot. But you could see the poor buggers going in. And we were laid off, like, you know.
You were off about how far off the coast?
Oh, about 100 yards, 200 yards, I suppose. And might have been more, but we'd see everything, what was going on. And we were sweeping, doing a sweep, making sure that, because at the time, the two-man submarines, acoustic torpedoes was out, and there was a lot of that type of thing. Nighttime, there was E-boats. I don't remember a lot, you know. Everything was one thing after another, so you can't pick out, basically, everything was exciting. And
well, tell us a bit about either, well, one of those things, perhaps the E-boats, what do you remember?
Nighttime E-boats, yeah. All you see was a flurry of foam, star shells lighting up the sky, and still foam going from left to right, right to left, round you. We was firing, but whether we had any success, I don't know. So fast, so quick, but at least no one hit us at the time. And that went on, and then from there we was going across the channel at Portsmouth. While we was in Portsmouth, don't know which day it was, we lost the ship about just a little way off. The Watchman, that was torpedoed, of an old V&W destroyer in the harbour at Portsmouth. And that was that.
Now what about the, you mentioned the two-man submarines. Did you actually contact any of them or see any of them or go encounter any of them?
We did contact submarines and charges, but we never had any company service or anything like that. But with taking these convoys from, say, Weymouth and across back again, back to Plymouth again, more convoys. As you went in, they called out any casualties, any dead casualties at the boom, and whatever. We never had a lot, but we did have some, and just unloaded and done the business. Might get a night in Plymouth, a night in Portsmouth, but it was all convoy back and forwards. Very busy time. And from then it went right on till Christmas, basically.
And what any of them, any particular actions you remember or incidents?
No, only the Watchman was the one. But we was taken away in November. We used to leave here and go and do a convoy, like I suppose they do through this Enigma business where Wolfpacks was congregating. So away they took us, and we see ships torpedoed in the convoys, merchant ships. We did pick up survivors. Matter of fact, I think Trader all lost his boot trying to help a survivor on, and they charged him for it. He put his hung off the ladder and put his boot down, his foot down. The survivor got hold of his boot and it come off. Anyway, saved the bloke. Trader lost his boot and he... That's a real whip round him. No, what trader? He's got more money than all of us.
And what is the next thing, the Whittaker then?
Pardon?
The loss of
our own ships, the Whittaker was the next. The Whittaker, 10 miles to in the morning, November 5th or whatever. No, it wouldn't have been the 5th, that's firework day. But it was November 14th.
We can look it up.
Yeah, it's around there somewhere.
And what do you remember of what happened?
I was starboard lookout. I always seem to be up there somewhere. But I'd stopped finishing doing 4 hours with the headphones on. I'd asked to take a turn and look out, give me a break. And as I was pretty good at the mast, I got that. And I used to take that turn. But this time I was starboard lookout. And 10 miles to in the morning, looking through the glasses, just naturally as you look through from left to right. And all of a sudden, a great big explosion lit the sky right up. I reported in Mock, I remember Mock, very laconic big fella. All right, Luff, we can see it. No panic, no nothing. All right, Luff, we can see it. So that was that. Skippers come on the bridge and we went through the convoy, and as we got through the convoy I could see the markings on the ship. If you look at the ship, it's light grey, dark grey. I said, one of ours, sir. And we didn't know it was a Whittaker, but anyway, when we got there's half a ship. And I think I've got a photo of half a ship.
They can't see it, yeah.
And anyway, it was half a ship. From the folks from the below the back of the bridge to the folks all gone. And anyway, we went alongside. I was on a fender till we got secured, and Buckman, I remember Bishop there. We was jumping backwards and forwards, helping what blokes we could who were drifting around in a daze, because impeding us was the depth charge racks, which run for half the length of the ship. So we was climbing over them, helping the boys over and whatever. There was men still burning in what was left of the Westland. And there was plenty, not plenty, there was men lying about. And that was that. We got them all off. And I remember Froggy French calling out, Luffy, yep, get them men out of the way. And there was five or six survivors. And I said to them, come on, lads, get down below. So I tried to usher them into the foreign mess deck, and they wouldn't have it. They said, no, we're not going down there no more. No, mate, I ain't going there. I said, well, there's only one answer. You'll have to go up in the boat deck. And I took them up and put them up below the whaler. I even got them a tarpaulin out of the cutter or the whaler, and I wrapped them all of it. Five or six of them got the big tarpaulin out, and they got in it, and I shoved it over and hid them. And that's how they were. So I left them there as far as I was concerned, and back I went down below, and we started getting the time wire out then, and no, the cable, it wasn't a wire, and we got the hawser. And we went and started tying her. I think the convoy carried a hospital ship, and the doctor came over. I remember seeing a civilian type with a cap on, but one of the uniform cap. I said, who's he? He said, oh, he's a Merchant Navy doctor. And anyway, he come aboard, and we was towing the ship. Then after the ship, left our men on board there, sewing up hammocks, all their lot. Anyway, my mate Taffy was, he was a man with good stomach. He was on there. And anyway, that was that. And then Darcy, who you were going to see soon, he was a junior lieutenant. He was told to get in the Carly float, this was about dinner time, I suppose, whatever time it was, they needed food, they needed hot drinks and that. And he went down the Tyne Wire on a Carly float with straddling the hawser. Anyway, so I was a lookout again at the same time. I had my glasses on him. I should have done the other way, but I had my glasses on him, seeing the trouble he was getting into with this, with the heaving of the ship, and that taken him out of the water, practically. But anyway, he managed it, and he got back to the stern, and they had their food and drink. And that was that. A little while later on, I think it was two tugs, but it might have only been one. I think it was two tugs from Derry come and took him. Took the what was left, and away they went back to Londonderry. And that was the story of the Whittaker. That was November. In between, all I'm going to say is, when we went to sea, if it wasn't big trouble, it was some trouble. There was something happening all the time. If it wasn't a dummy charge, you could hear someone dropping charge and mark, like sitting in an empty barrel. That's how these ships was. They never had portholes. All it was a steel tube. And you could hear them miles away. You'd say, oh my God, someone's depth charging me. No panic, we got so used to it. And you had right mates to cover you, whatever.
Did you get nervous at all yourself? I mean, I know collectively you were
all right. To be honest, no. I was always excited, but never worried or anything like that. That's the honest truth. I never even qualmed. If you'd have asked me to go somewhere else, I would have been choked, because I was, I won't say enjoying it. I knew I was part of something which was good, and all my friends, there was only one man I ever see break down, and that was when the bomb fell at, what's his name, and he was at Collingwood, and he was boy named Basil, a country boy who'd never seen nothing. And he sat cowering on the floor with his head in his hands, and me and Stanley, I remember it, we cuddled him and said, come on, Baz, you'll be all right, mate. And we got him round, because we'd seen it for 2 years, we'd expected it, and it was a funny old thing. But asked whether I was nervous, I can honestly wonder at myself. It was an exciting time. It was an adventure, as far as I was concerned.
Now, you had two more minor jobs, I know, but that we haven't done yet. One was that you were sometimes the relief helmsman. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, yeah, well, our coxswain was a man from East Ham, and I come from West Ham. And I think every opportunity brought me on, like, you know. Luffy, yeah. Yes, Chief, you like hour at the wheel? And I used to go on the wheel, and he used to... it wasn't my regular position. It was, I used to have a little enjoy in the afternoon. He used to tell me all about it, all the points of the compass, and it was the learning process all the way through.
How did it... Because it wasn't like a normal wheel, was it?
It was a wheel, an ordinary wheel, yeah.
Not a disc?
No, it was a wheel. If I remember right, I mean, I could be wrong, but it was always a wheel, as far as I can see. And it was just enjoyable, sort of something you picked up. And I mean, my job was a gun sweeper, basically, but I could always be lost for an hour. I used to see Taylor, the gunner, and be excused for an hour, all right, or while I was off watch, I'd do these things.
The other thing we didn't talk about, in port, you acted on the motorboat. Tell us what you did on the motorboat.
Oh, I was a bowman on the motorboat.
A bowman. And what did that involve?
That involved getting your head out of the canvas cover with a boat hook when you come alongside and hold on. Keep your eyes peeled, see where you was going. When I'm at Milford Haven, there was a storm. Our skipper had two wrens aboard. And don't know whether he should do or not, but he was very anxious to get them off. So he called the motorboat's crew away, me, Bishop, and the engineer. That's all there was, three of us, two wrens and the skipper. And as fast we cast off, and now we've got to make Milford Haven, there's no lights. There was a dull light when you got to the jetty, no lights. And there was a storm warning, and the waves, it was rough to be in a little 20-foot cutter. Motor car, like, you know. Anyway, as fast as I poked my head out the... Come on, Luffy, he said, see what you can see. As fast as I poked my head out the canvas, the sea was knocking me back. I was going to finish up on the engine. And this went on and on And in the finish, I did see the light. Thank God, Luff, he said. Good lad. And anyway, we got round to the point of, after a long journey. Bishop was standing up because it was a raised platform. Bishop standing up. The worst of luck, but he did have a roll behind him. I never had nothing behind me, and I was just flung everywhere. But anyway, we got the rems off. The skipper was well pleased, took us back to the ship, asked us out, took us up the wardroom, filled Bishop up with whiskey, said, "Luff," he said, "you're not old enough, are you? Have a lemonade." I could not do that then. So that was another time in Milford Haven. Another time coming off at Milford Haven, you won little excerpts. We landed at the fish jetty. being picked up at the fish jetty. And you can guess, before Christmas sometime, there was fish laying all over the place, and some silly bugger aimed a fish, and then it all started. We was all aiming fish. And we were throwing them at each other. We finished up with skulls all over us. Didn't even think, you know. Anyway, I got back aboard and I had a, what's the dorsal fin of a cod, whatever. It was like that, like a 6-inch dagger, and it was right down my shoulder blade, right in my brand new Burberry. Yeah, when you think of things like that. Anyway, back we went, and away we went again. Convoys. And as I say, nothing too much action, and it was always something going.
Now, what about your leave in London? Because I know you've got a story about a bomb incident in London tell us about going on leave, just generally.
Going on leave, we used to have 5 days from Belfast, and that meant travelling 2 days. You left Belfast 12 o'clock midday. You got to Larne, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. Then you, it seemed to me, you got the all night, the late ferry across to Stranraer. And then it took, 10 hours to get down to London, something like that. It was, you got in London at 6 o'clock in the morning or something like that. And this time, what you're talking about, there was many a time there was air raids and that, but this time there was an air raid, a proper air raid. And so they held the train outside Euston till 8 o'clock. Anyway, all calmed down, we went in. I went home, and as I went up to the door, it's laying flat, down. The windows are out, and Dad's sweeping up. As far as I knew, I thought my mum was home from evacuation. And I said to Dad, "What's all this, Dad?" And he said, "Give us a hand, Jimmy, clear up." And I said, "Oh, blimey, let's have a fag first." And I brought him out 50 Churchill, and he loved the tickler. And that, I said, "Have a smoke first, and then we'll get stuck into it." He said, "Uncle Tom's been injured around the corner." So I said, "What's happened?" He said, "He was cranking his lorry up. He's only from here down to the shops, if you like." And he said, "The V2's dropped to the other side of the road and blew him against the corrugated." He said, "I think he's all right because he knew me." He said, "He's in the Lido dressing station." He said, "They're taking him to Queen Mary's, that's the hospital." So, right, that was that. We fixed up the door as best we could and then went over to Nottingham Arms, which is a local pub. And all the windows was out, and we stood there drinking with a police inspector. That was that. Then we decided to go down to Bishop Stortford. We phoned up the hospital. Tom was comfortable, couldn't see him yet. So I went down to Bishop Stortford. Now, got to Bishop Stortford, and Mum was in a shop. They'd put her in a shop for the night, whatever, counter, everything there, and had young Fred, Patrick, he was only a couple of years old, as old as the 43, so 45, 2 years old, and Bob, he was about 10, I suppose, he's 4 years younger than me, no, he must have been about 13, so he was the live one of the family, and he was a godsend with my love as far as messages and everything was concerned. And I come in there and I had a few bob, which you never spent no money because you was at sea 28 days at a time and only had 5 days in. And it was easy to save a few bob. Come home, took Mum for a drink, bought her some food and that. She was well pleased to see me. Aunt Meg was there, Aunt Hilda was there, Aunt Ethel was there, they're all sisters. And they stuck together. In the finish, they had a lovely little house at Ashford in near Stansted Air, which is Stansted now. There was Airdrome there. And the Yanks, I used to go over the Foxes, which was a local pub, and the Yanks, I couldn't no sooner get in there, they wanted to take me out, the Yanks take me for a drink, and especially when they knew I'd been to the States in Boston and that. And I was well welcomed with them. And took me up the Airdrome to dances, and I used to have a rare old time for a little couple of days, like, you know, and back I'd go. Anyway, that leave special, come back a day early, only had 2 days with Mum. Went back, went Queen Mary's Hospital, walked in. My Uncle Tom, big bluff Tom, he was sitting up in bed. Called to me from the doorway, "Jim Murray!" About 49 he was. Yeah, he was 4 years old in the year. And called out to me, went over, "Good old Tom," because you're jocular, laughing, First World War Army corporal, you know, a lovely man. And he was our ideal uncle. Whenever you see Tom, if he had a copper, he'd give it. And that was Tom, and we loved him. His son was an army sergeant in Italy, young Tom, and we was all cousins together.
How bad was he?
Didn't think he was bad at the time. But what had happened, he had TB and had an operation, and but he looked bluff and well. Anyway, I went back. "All right, Tom, yeah, lovely." Went back, lovely. I got round into Belfast. Our first patrol, that was into the Channel again. Got round to Portsmouth Harbour. I had a letter. Uncle Tom died 2 days after you left. And that was Tom. Aunt Ethel was broken hearted. And they're all buried together now. The Mum, Dad, Uncle Tom, Aunt Ethel, they're all together.
So, anything else about you? What would you actually do when you were in London itself? You know,
London itself, I hardly spent time in London. If I did, it was the club, the Fairman House Club. Because, as you can see, it was travelling down to see my mum. If she wasn't in London, she'd be down Essex. So that took me a day, and I never had no time. 5 days from Belfast, or 5 days... I might have had 7 days from Belfast, 5 days home, but it was no time at all. And I might get a night in London, and Dad was working in London at the time. I'd stay with him, let her see Mum, go and do that, and I was travelling all the time. Enjoy myself, like, one way or another.
Now, the next thing I want to ask you was, I don't know what the next big incident would be, when you lost the Capel and the Affleck.
Capel, the Affleck. Now, the next big incident was 2 days before Christmas Eve. There was two troopers, I ain't sure it was two, but they stuck right out of the water. They was torpedoed outside Cherbourg. And we was screening them. Screening, I remember they were stuck right out of the water and screening, and we was patrolling, see if we picked up anything. We might have done a bit of depth charging, which must have done, because there was nothing unusual for us to be depth charging. Anyway, these two troopers were sunk, with 800 men were killed, were drowned. And that was the start of that. That weekend, that was Christmas Eve. I think it was Christmas Eve, yeah. It went all through Christmas Day. And Boxing Day, it was a beautiful sunny day. I remember laughing with Jock Freffel. He was a Scotchman who was actually on the Queen Elizabeth with me, so he stayed with me all the while, Jock. And he come from just outside Edinburgh, where there's a racetrack. But anyway,